From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Robert Hoffler is my guest this week. He's the author of many books, including Party Animals and The Man Who Invented Rock Hudson. His latest is a history of the era that shattered the barriers of sexuality in popular culture, from Hair on Broadway, Updike and Philip Roth in literature, Midnight Cowboy and Last Tango in Paris in the movies. The book is called Sexplosion, From Andy Warhol to A Clockwork Orange, How a Generation of Pop Rebels Broke All the Taboos. Robert Hoffler, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thanks for having me.
You know, a lot of people listening to us and reading Sexplosion were not alive in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s. So it's a history for them the way a history of World War II would be for me, or even, I think, even a history of like the 19th century, because the world has changed so radically in the past 40 years. Your book doesn't really make much of a judgment, but what do you think? Do you think the sexplosion that you describe was entirely a good thing?
Well, I always think that you can see some negative things in any movement, but I feel that this is one way in which history... there are a number of things. I honestly have a little bit of a problem with the sex and violence in A Clockwork Orange, that I think that the movies don't so much glamorize as they sometimes validate. And I have a little bit of a problem with that. I don't think that sometimes when I go to see a movie today, something like 12 Years a Slave, I don't think that that director quite knew how to handle the violence. And so he didn't go over the top with it, but he did not find a creative way to present that violence. I believe that artists should be able to do exactly what they want to. I feel that, you know, there should be no censorship. If you don't like it, you don't have to see it, or you can get up and leave. But I do think that there are times where the graphicness of sex and violence is not always to the best for a work of art.
Well, in your book, Sexplosion, you talk about the resistance to nudity and sex in the cinema that was originally from the right, from the conservatives, but then the opposition later was from the left in the form of the women's movement. So do you think that increased use of sexuality to sell tickets or whatever has led to this objectification of women? I mean, there was recent criticism of that show True Detective on HBO because its portrayal of women characters is, I know there's a lot of strippers or whatever. And of course, there's Miley Cyrus, who regularly performs an act that Jim Morrison would have been arrested for.
Mm-hmm. I feel that the thing with it was intriguing to me when I was doing research on the book and looking at 68 and 69, I was finding very little resistance from any feminist. And when that really changed was really with like About Carnal Knowledge that Mike Nichols and Jules Pfeiffer did. And of course, they thought that they were doing this movie about a male chauvinist pig. But a number of feminists felt that it kind of went over the top and they were actually, you were supposed to identify with this Jack Nicholson character or whatever. And then, of course, you had Last Tango in Paris, and of course you had a piece of real pornography like Deep Throat. I feel with that period, the whole feminist objection to pornography is an issue that we really don't even have today. That the women's movement, I did put this in the book, I think the reason that feminists who objected to pornography got so much play in the press is because it made good copy. What did not make good copy was feminists who were trying for equal pay and reproductive rights and daycare, because that's not sexy. So there was all this brouhaha about movies and books and whatever that were supposedly sexist, and all of a sudden you couldn't read Norman Mailer and D.H. Lawrence was sexist and whatever. And I just feel it made very sexy copy. But today, even though pornography is a much bigger business than it was back in the late 60s, much bigger business, we don't hear about it that much because it has gone basically into people's living rooms. You just stream it now. You get your videos or whatever. And it's really not so much on newsstands or marquees anymore. I mean, you have to remember that this period that I was writing about is when, you know, if you saw a porno movie, you had to go to a movie theater to see it.
With your raincoat.
That just isn't the case anymore. So I don't think people like passing by theaters and seeing kind of semi-naked women or, you know, women with orgasmic faces or whatever. But the thing is, no one's complaining about it much anymore because it's really gone into everyone's living room. And I think, you know, now, I mean, the National Organization for Women is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, what they're focused on is equal pay, reproductive rights, daycare, the real issues that that movement was always about.
But on the other hand, though, and I think this relates to the era of sexplosion, when you walk through the mall and you walk past the Victoria's Secret, there's like a gigantic woman in her underpants.
Well, there is within advertising, you know, there is a lot of erotica in advertising, and you know whether that's particularly a good thing or not was kind of a subject, you know, beyond, you know, what was
the
really
scope of your book, right?
Of my book. Actually, I kind of get into that with my next book.
Oh, good. Well, all right, I'll make a note when you come back.
Very good. Thank
for your
you.
Next one, we'll talk about that. My grandmother and I used to like to go to the movies together, and when I was a little kid, I think I was like 13, and you know, I was totally into the Beatles, and so when a movie came out that had Ringo in it, I really wanted to go see it. So yeah. I said, Grandma, will you take me to this movie? It was called Candy.
Oh, yeah.
So then she always told all her friends, you know, oh, Gary takes me all these dirty movies. Uh-huh. Then we went to the movies, and I said, okay, we were going to go to the National Theater in Westwood. I said, that's a good movie, I promise you. But unbeknownst to me, they had changed the bill. And as we sat down, we didn't realize that now we were watching Carnal Knowledge. So I saw both those movies with my grandma.
Oh, but, very good.
But and I didn't like Candy, and neither did she. But we both thought that Carnal Knowledge was really a fine film, a really excellent film.
Yeah, it. I think it was a very expensive movie, essentially because it was only four characters. But it turned out to be a very expensive movie, and I'm not sure that it did all that well. Candy, on the other hand, is a very interesting, it's a truly abysmal movie, but Terry Southern, who wrote it, and of course Candy was a novel that was written in the late 50s and was banned for a long time, but sold millions of copies, and Terry Southern was very upset about the movie. Number one, he wanted it to have XXX material in it, but of course be a mainstream movie. And James Coburn, when he signed on to it, really thought that there would be unsimulated sex in it. And of course the movie just turned out to be this total travesty. But it was intriguing because Terry Southern, during that period in 1970, published a novel called Blue Movie, and it was what was really the thinking at that period, particularly with the huge success of Last Tango in Paris and Deep Throat, which of course was a pornographic movie, but it did have a story and it did have a lot of humor. And you have to remember that, you know, people like Mike Nichols and Truman Capote and Johnny Carson were going off to 42nd Street to see this porno movie. And it was a huge cause celeb, and I think it grossed $600 million in 1970, you know, dollars. But the thinking was, when he wrote this novel, Blue Movie, that the major studios were going to get into doing movies with XXX material with major stars, and these major stars would be having unsimulated sex in that movie. But that was something that never happened, and it's really kind of why my book essentially ends in 73 and 74, because Deep Throat, Harry Reams was convicted of interstate trafficking in pornography, and Carnal Knowledge was deemed obscene and banned in the state of Georgia. And both of those convictions were overturned, but Hollywood became so afraid of any kind of sex at that time that people were afraid if they used a four-letter word, if they appeared nude in a movie, if they you know, even simulated sex, that they could be arrested for interstate trafficking and pornography. Even though they were living in California, they could be arrested, you know, and convicted in the state of Kentucky. The reason I bring this up, that it is intriguing to me that we have actually kind of reached that stage in 2014 with a movie like Nymphomaniac. Even though there's no penetrative sex in it, well, there is penetrative sex in it, but it's done with body doubles. And there were two French movies that came out recently. One was Stranger by the Lake, and another one was Blue is the Warmest Color. And those also had penetrative sex in them, even though they were done with body doubles and whatever. And then you also had James Franco's documentary, which just came out, called Interior Leather Bar. So it is intriguing that it has taken us this long to get to this place that people thought we were going to be at in 1973.
Well, of course, those films from France, I guess, you know, they're always kind of ahead of the game. But in Blue is the Warmest Color, I mean, that has a very long, uninterrupted sex scene. I think it's about 7 minutes long. I think they would make that movie now exactly the same way if it had been two male lovers instead of two female lovers?
Well, if you saw Stranger by the Lake, I mean, Stranger by a Lake, you know, it is intriguing to me, you know, kind of looking at the history of cinema, and this is also, it's getting into a little bit of my next book, but it always is considered like full frontal nudity, and, you know, one sex has exterior sex organs and the other sex has interior sex organs. So that is always where there's kind of been a divide, that people have been easier in the cinema seeing naked women than they have been seeing naked men. That's why, you know, one of the movies I paid particular attention to in this book was Women in Love, because Oliver Reed and Alan Bates had this full frontal wrestling match within the middle of it. And the only reason that Ken Russell was able to get away with that is because they were so faithful to a classic novel by D.H. Lawrence. And the British censors, you know, when they showed them the script, the British censor said, no way are we going to allow this. But they went ahead and made it anyway and thought, well, maybe we'll have to cut it. But the British censors, because they were so faithful to D.H. Lawrence, they allowed them to keep that full frontal scene with the two naked men in it.
We're talking with Robert Hoffler, and his new book is called Sexplosion, From Andy Warhol to A Clockwork Orange, How a Generation of Pop Rebels Broke All the Taboos. I loved the book. It was so fascinating and fun to read. And it kind of gets going with Hair, which I saw at the Aquarius Theater in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really interesting that you said that the reason that the nude scene is poorly lit and that they just stand so still is because the law prevented them from moving.
Yes, that it was okay to be nude as long as it was a tableau, but you could not move. And then a year after that, the critic Kenneth Tynan did a review called O Calcutta. And they were very worried because they wanted to have a nude ballet in it with a male dancer and a female dancer. And they were very, very worried about that. And they invited the police in to see it beforehand and whatever, but they were really very much afraid that they were not going to be allowed to stage that show. And when it went on to Broadway, I mean, it played off Broadway first because they could not get a Broadway theater, because the Broadway theaters did not want to have such a dirty show in their theaters. And then, of course, a year later, Broadway was like, hey, why don't you come uptown? Mm-hmm. And then it ran for 7,000 performances. What was intriguing about that, because you mentioned Los Angeles, is that it opened, O Calcutta opened in New York in June of 1969, but when it went to San Francisco, it got busted that fall. And then later on, it went to L.A. and it got busted. So, you know, the laws were in place. And also, when I talked to the producer of Hair for Sexplosion, he said that he had 10 lawyers working to keep Hair running in theaters in America throughout the 70s.
So, I mean, the objections to that kind of stuff, maybe it fell away in New York faster than in Oklahoma.
Yes. Well, faster than even California. I was a little surprised by that. And I'm trying to think, there was... Hare ran into trouble in Boston, I know, when it went there. Of course, that was always banned in Boston, was the big thing. But I know that O Calcutta was busted, that the actors went to jail in San Francisco and they went to jail in Los Angeles. Mm. And that was late in 1969.
Yeah, yeah. So
supposedly, you know, when you saw, though, Hare...
Yeah.
The two lovers, Jerome Ragni and James Rado, who wrote it, by the time they got to Los Angeles, it was no longer a stat. I'm not so sure that it was static, that I heard that there were some performances where they were really running up and down the aisles naked. And in fact, when they came back to the show in New York after doing it in Los Angeles for a while, even Mayor Lindsay complained about it. He says, hey, look, you've got to do something about these guys. And they were suspended for a while from the show because they were not doing the nude scene statically.
One thing I noticed when I saw the revival on Broadway a couple of years ago is that the people in the show, although they were striving for authenticity, the nude scene revealed how inauthentic they were. What I mean is there were a lot of tattoos, which was not the case in 1960,
yeah, that's true.
And there was very little body hair, which was also not the case in the 60s. I think they should have had little, you know, they should have had little underarm toupees.
Okay, well, you're paying closer attention.
I had opera glasses.
I did.
Yeah.
I did notice that a few men were kind of holding themselves. I did notice that some of the people who were like the bigger name performers, you know, were kind of in the back of the nude scene, and you know, when they walked off, they were kind of holding themselves. And I think that, you know, in this day of everyone taking selfies and cell phones and cameras and whatever, that you probably do kind of have to watch that. You know, when they first did that, I was surprised that Hair, when it was done off Broadway, before it went to Broadway, did not have the nude scene, and it did not have the musical number Sodomy. And Joseph Papp at the Public Theater was kind of like, well, I'm finished with this show. I'm going on to do something else now. And it was Tom O'Horgan who wanted to do the nude scene. And, of course, Ragni and Rado really wanted it. I think they suggested it. And when they were considering having the actors wear body stockings. And when they actually did it, only two or three people did it at the first preview. And then by the time the show opened, almost everyone in the cast was doing the nude scene except for Diane Keaton.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking with Robert Hoffler, and his book is called Sexplosion. You talk about a lot of mainstream Hollywood films that I loved, like Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, for instance. But you also talk about Warhol's films, which, you know, I don't know anybody that really could sit through any of those films.
I actually like all Flesh, Trash, and Heat. And Flesh and Trash, I spent quite a bit of time on. Heat, I don't think, broke any taboos. In fact, you could tell that Andy Warhol and Paul Morrissey were trying to go for a more mainstream audience because there's not as much sex and nudity in Heat as there is in Flesh and Trash. And in fact, I was surprised going back and looking at Flesh, which I believe came out in 1969, that you saw Joe D'Alessandro's erection and it wasn't a piece of plastic like Jonah Hill in Wolf of Wall Street. So I was kind of taken aback by that. And, you know, the interesting story to me about Flesh is, and it's one of the things I tried to do with the book, is I tried to show how there was one degree of separation between all of these people, particularly in 68 and 69, and that John Schlesinger, who did Midnight Cowboy, went to Andy Warhol and wanted him to play himself in the movie as a documentary filmmaker. And Andy said, no, I don't want to do it, but why don't you have my superstar Viva do it? So Viva played Gretel and her brother Hansel were the two who took the documentary film, and that was the wild party at which, you know, The Hustler by John Voight meets Brenda Vaccaro and they go home, and that's the first time that he's successful as a hustler in New York City. And that was actually a party that went on for 4 days with lots of real sex and real drugs, going on, and it was populated with a lot of the superstars from Andy Warhol's factory. Well, Andy Warhol was in the hospital because he'd been shot by Valerie Solanas and got very upset that his scene at the factory was being appropriated by John Schlesinger. So he said to Paul Morrissey, isn't there a movie we can do to beat them at their game? And then so Paul Morrissey came up with this idea to do a movie about a male hustler who has to hustle clients in order to pay for his wife's girlfriend's abortion. And that's the story of Flesh. And I just think it's so wonderful how those all kind of dovetailed together. And, of course, that made Joe D'Alessandro this huge gay icon. And then the other dovetail, the other kind of interesting story is that, you know, then John Schlesinger was making his next movie, Sunday Bloody Sunday, and his old boyfriend, Larry Kramer, showed him the rough cut for his new movie, Women in Love, directed by Ken Russell. And John Schlesinger saw Glenda Jackson, and that's why he cast her in Sunday Bloody Sunday. And I just love that there really was this kind of community of people, and they were all working in this milieu of all this sex-related material that was very adventurous.
Wanting to push the barriers, not just wanting to express themselves as artists, but doing it in a way that would be expanding the palette, so to speak.
Well, it would be expanding, and, you know, and I do think there was something about money, but there was also something exciting. You were doing something kind of daring, and so I think that daringness and breaking new barriers kind of made all the works a little bit more exciting. It certainly made people talk about them more. I feel as though now people talk about, oh, what grossed the most for the weekend. And it has been kind of interesting to see how fixated people are on this movie Nymphomaniac, even though there's no huge stars in it. But, you know, people seem to be kind of very tantalized by it. And at this particular time in you know, the culture, so much of this was going on, not only in the movies and theater, but also, you know, the novels, Myra Breckinridge and Couples and Portnoy's Complaint. So it was an intriguing time.
Oh, absolutely it was. It's interesting, too, because Midnight Cowboy, which I think is a very fine film, it's a wonderful film, and it was rated X, and yet it won the Academy Award for Best Picture. Today, if it was released today, I think it could be PG-13. There's
Well, I think it would be probably R, but okay.
There's no nudity. Quick flashes of nudity. I don't think they would make a movie like that today, but, you know, one of the interesting things about the ratings system then was that X meant not pornography, but that this is an adult movie that deals with adult subject matter that adults would see and kids shouldn't see.
Yes. United Artists and John Schlesinger were very happy with that X because it didn't mean pornography. However, it was released, I think, kind of about spring of 1969 when it got nominated for an Oscar in January or February of the next year. The Academy was very upset that the voters had voted to nominate an X-rated movie. And they went to John Schlesinger and said, can you cut that scene of oral sex between Bob Balaban and John Voight in the movie theater? Of course, you don't see anything at all.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden, kind of Bob Balaban just kind of disappears. But John Schlesinger said, absolutely not. And they wanted him to cut it so they could get an R. And so he said, absolutely not. It is staying in the movie. But by the time Clockwork Orange came out and Straw Dogs came out, they were both given X's. And by that, I think it was about 1971, that's when a number of newspapers said, we will not carry advertising for X-rated movies. And so Straw Dogs, Sam Peckinpah, cut the rape scene a little bit. He cut a few seconds out of a double rape scene in Straw Dogs to get an R, but Kubrick refused to cut the movie.
Well, that's when the rating system becomes censorship, as it is today. I mean, an NC-17 is a kiss of death because no newspapers will advertise your movie, so artists are absolutely cutting their movie to...
And it's the advertising, but it's also that, oh, we're going to restrict our audience, and, you know, who wants to restrict, you know, 16 and 17-year-olds from seeing a movie because that's going to cut into it. I mean, what has happened to the movies, and of course this has been going on for decades now, you know, what was wonderful about the movies in the 30s and the 40s is that everyone went to the movies, so they could do a woman's movie, they could do a movie just, you know, geared for children or whatever, and since everyone went, they could make a profit. But now it's like so few people actually go to the movies that the only reliable market they have is that kind of 15 to 25.
Right, and that's why all the movies are superhero movies.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, there's very little daring cinema going on. I mean, I haven't seen Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Yeah.
But, you know, I...
Well, I do feel that there are... I don't necessarily agree with that, and I have a long history of being an entertainment editor. I do find when I watch TCM that I go like, oh, I've never seen that movie with Joan Crawford and Clark Gable. Well, it must be good. It has Joan Crawford and Clark Gable. And it's horrible. You know, that once you get beyond that kind of six movies or 10 movies that came out every year that were good, it immediately falls off. And sometimes it's not always kind of... You don't always recognize the really good movies on first viewing. I know that sometimes, you know, it's later on that I go and like, hey, my God, I've been watching this movie every time it comes on TV. I really like it. And I think a number of the movies, you know, during this period, because I was in college, so I was the perfect audience for these sexplosion movies. But a number of them I didn't think much about or I didn't get them. I did not understand performance with Mick Jagger, and I watched it recently for this book, and I thought it was brilliant. And also Ken Russell's movie, The Devils. What I saw was a very cut version, and when I did this book, I was fortunate to see some material that was taken out of it, particularly a sequence called Rape of the Christ, which goes on, I think, for 10 minutes. And it was based on, of course, a true story about these 17th century nuns who thought they were possessed by the devil, and threw off their clothes and masturbated with crucifixes, and people from hundreds of miles around would come and watch them. This is what's going on in the 17th century. And it you know, and now I look at that movie and I see it as really brilliant. Then Last Tango in Paris, which I thought was brilliant when I first saw it because I love Pauline Kael and she thought it was brilliant. Now I look at it and it's just turgid. So, you know, it is kind of intriguing what you really like and what you don't. But most of the movies I really did find held up. I certainly thought Midnight Cowboy held up. I think Sunday Bloody Sunday by John Schlesinger is just brilliant. I did not like John Updike's novel Couples, rereading that. And I, when I was researching this book, I got so I really, he was one of the people of this period that I really disliked. Because he had done, of course, this book about spouse swapping in New England, and he was very, in his interviews, the publicity he did for the book, he became very damning of the permissiveness of the culture. And he never indicated in any way whatsoever in those interviews that permissiveness had allowed him the freedom to write such a novel that had so many graphic sex scenes. And I couldn't get over that, and I also couldn't get over the fact that, you know, he supported the Vietnam War, and he was really the only major author in America who supported the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Which tied in, I mean, this is, you know, here to talk about my book, linked him to Gore Vidal and Jules Pfeiffer and Philip Roth because they were writing this sex theme material at the same time, and they hated him so much because he was pro-war and they were, of course, all very anti-war. And then so the book also tries to go into some of the politics of the period, whether it be the Vietnam War, the Stonewall Riots, or Roe v. Wade. So, you know, that's the book.
It's a fascinating period in history and a fascinating book. The book is called Sexplosion, From Andy Warhol to A Clockwork Orange, How a Generation of Pop Rebels Broke All the Taboos, and the author, my guest, Robert Hoffler. Thanks so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thanks for having me.
That's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at FromTheBookshelf.com. www.thebookshop.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. Why don't you go like us right now? I want to thank my guest, Robert Hoffler. His book, Sexplosion, From Andy Warhol to A Clockwork Orange, How a Generation of Pop Rebels Broke All the Taboos. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.